Welcome to this week's edition of the Gary Colling Prize for Fantasy Excellence Weekly Wash-Up. Not too sure if it's still called a weekly wash-up, but that's what we'll go with for this week's edition. So we've got a couple of things to get into. I did have some calls that I made to some of the coaches, but couldn't figure out how to record them, so we've shipped that off. Also, I plan to do some transitions in between some of the segments, but if there aren't any transitions, that's because I couldn't be asked and I have other things to do. So let's go straight into the week that was. We had some pretty deplorable scores, and on the other end of it, we had some pretty tight games that were two sides that scored pretty well. So just looking at round four rounds in already, we can kind of see the shape of the league as it's going along. We had Dido losing to Diggy Train, so 1206 to 1258. Two pretty middling sides that I don't really want to talk about. So Tiggy Train flying pretty high at the moment, 2-2, looking good. The return, Harrow, we'll get to him, lost to the Salty Hawk. So an absolute percentage booster for Costa there, 1357 versus 1024. I beat Hayden, 1282 to 1125, my best score of the year, which is depressing. And then Sam, with a really good score, beat Lockie, 1364 versus 1339. And then the OG Connor D beating Jack Rossi, who doesn't seem to know that there's a round of football every weekend and that he has to check the teams because he relies on his opponent to tell him who's playing and who's not. So Connor Downey winning the Good Bloke of the Week award and then also winning the game. Where does that leave us in terms of ladder position? So Salty Hawk comfortably on top, 3-1 with a massive percentage due to the fact that every single time anyone plays him, they score their worst score of the year. Lockie next, followed by Connor Downey, pretty tight in terms of percentage. And then rounding out the four, you've got Tiggy Train. The bottom four of the top eight is me, Sam, Hayden, and then Rossi, who has miraculously clawed his way to a 2-2 record after 4 weeks. That leaves in all too familiar territory Daddy Dido in ninth spot, and then Jack Harrison, who quite possibly, and we'll get to it, might have the worst team that anyone's ever had in the Gary Colling Prize for Fantasy Excellence. History. So let's get to Harrow's team. Genuinely might be the worst team I've ever seen in the history of this competition. So from his defense, he has Blitzarfs, not too bad for a ruckman playing down there. Jakey Lever, who's actually been pretty good, but he definitely picked up from the bin. Stephen May, who's gone for about a million weeks with a broken eye socket or something. Noah Bolter, who is a track and field guy trying to play AFL. And Brad Shepherd on the bench. So you put Brad Shepherd in Stephen May's spot, it's not looking all too bad. And then we move into this midfield. Cam Guthrie played his best game a couple of weeks ago, but wouldn't expect him to get anywhere near the 120s or anything like that week to week. Sitting around 90 to 100 with him, I reckon. Christian Petrarca, gun, should play pretty well. Josh Kelly has not been great to start the season, and I've watched a lot of their games. Just doesn't look great. Taylor Adams, he's gone for about 10 weeks. Shane Edwards, he's rubbish. Jack Viney played really well on the weekend, but wouldn't expect that from him every week. He's still averaging under 100 with that great game. And then Matty Rowe, who knows when he's back. And when he comes back, he'll probably just get injured again. Then we go to the Rucks. He's got Tim English and Reece Stanley. And he opted for Reece Stanley this week over Tim English, which was interesting. So Reece Stanley and Tim English, it's causing him headaches that he doesn't need, picking between two subpar ruckmen. Tim English, I don't actually know if he's good or not. He seems to score really well, and when you watch him, you're just severely underwhelmed. And Lord Stanley, we love him, but just not that good anymore. Tom Hawkins in his forward line, leading his forward line. He's averaging in the 80s, which is severely driven down by his score last week. They do have North Melbourne this week, so you'd expect Tomahawk to kick a massive bag and pull himself back up there. Tom Papley, now that Sydney are actually good, won't score very well, so that's good to know. Lockie Fogarty scored a 51 and has a thumbs up on this app, so that's all you need to know there. Trash. Sam Wicks, I don't even know what Sam Wicks looks like. You can kind of tell from me as a bit of a casual fan, if I don't know what half of these guys look like, then your team's probably not that good. So Sam Wicks, no idea. Lockie Fogarty, no idea what that guy looks like. And Noah Bolter, I'm pretty sure I know what he looks like, but I can't be certain. Jakey Lever's got a mo, so that one's pretty quick to figure out. But yeah, four rounds in, his total score is 4,481. It's in last place in terms of points scored by not even a country mile, but by a fair bit. Hayden struggling down there as well. So those two guys just severely, just Hayden at 2-2 with 60 more points than Harrow at 0-4. Scheduling is everything, and it's not going to get any easier for Harrow. He's got who does he have this week? He's got Daddy Dido. So I mean, this cements it, right? Dido needs this week to stay in the hunt. Already you might go two games out of the eight if he's unlucky soon, and then Harrow just needs to win. This is the chance. He's not going to get many until the bye round, and then he won't get many after the bye rounds either. So this is the big one for Daddy Dido and for Harrow. So big stakes this round, and my money is on Dido, because walking through Harrow's team, just the sheer incompetence of the football players on his team is exacerbated by the fact that his best players are now injured. So he's in a world of hurt, and I'm tipping, and like to start a bit of a trend. I'm gonna scratch him off the list. So he's not making finals. I've called it, and if he does make finals, I'll owe him a slab at the end of the year. But he's gone, as far as I'm saying, he's out of here. So let's move on to the next segment. So, forgive me, I'm eating a banana. So, in the next segment, we're just going to go through a couple of tips for the Dogs. Obviously, if you know me well, Australia's not where I like to put my money. The UK Dogs and the French Horses is really what I'm all about. So if we look at tomorrow for me, which might be today for you guys listening to the pod, let's have a look at Sheffield in the UK. So race three, always good race. We have Camp Rocky, Inca Flojo, and Holly Hill Lulu are the dogs that I've heard of before. Big fan of the stripes, number six. So Holly Hill Lulu, race three at Sheffield tomorrow. Big time there. We go to race eight and Factfile. Real fast dog. Has a great track record that Sportsbet don't seem to have any information on. And then race 14, you got to go with Zinedine Zadog. Great name. We love a good name. And Zinedine Zadog will get up there And my big bet of the podcast, let me just take another bite of my banana, will be in Saint-Honoré in France, race 5, the 1350 meters, race 5, Prix de la Meigne, and Jacques Coeur, number 4, ridden by Quentin Perret. Great jockey, great horse, and that horse will definitely get up. So that's it, race 5, Prix de la Meigne at Saint-Honoré. We got Jacques Coeur will definitely get up. So happy punting, punters. So I finished my banana, and I guess the next segment, because I've lost about 15 minutes of audio in calling coaches, it's just going to be my general thoughts about the year and who I think is going to win the Gary Comyn Prize for Fantasy Excellence. So I just want to talk about my team. It's not great. We can all agree on that. But there's some shining lights. Blake Hardwick has been a fantastic pickup. Jack Scrimshaw, good man, town boy. Didn't finish there, but good man, town boy. So that I'm happy with that. Lukosius is trash. Maynard doesn't seem to know how to get the football anymore. Whitfield's got a bruised liver. And Oleg Markov, I didn't know who that was until I picked him up. So good start from the defence. But the rest of my team is not too bad. And I think that I have the opportunity to really make some noise come finals time, to just have one random week where I score about 1400 and send somebody home packing. So I'm not going to win, but that I think is the ceiling for my team to be a real disruptor in come finals time. But if we get to the pointy end of who we think is going to win, this man, I don't even want to talk about him. If I have a bleep button, hopefully I can bleep his name out. But Costa, he's pretty good. He's pretty good at Supercoach. Won the last couple of years, beat me in the final last year. Pretty good. I hope he doesn't win. But in saying that, I wouldn't really like anybody else winning either. Next, Lockie and Connor. I think they're also big chances, and I really would like to see Connor win. I reckon he really needs the $350. He's really struggling at the moment financially, and $350 would really help him. He'd be able to buy dinners for me 35 Thursdays in a row at Footy Club, so that would be really nice of him to do, and I think that's what he would do if he won, so I'd be happy with that. And then Tiggy Train is no chance. I'm no chance. And when I say fuck this shit, I genuinely mean fuck this shit. Reign of Terror, OG Connor D and Tiggy Train both thought that he was a bit of a threat, but it, like I said to Connor, it's not so much about the players on the field, but the man of the box. And when it comes down to it, he doesn't make the right decisions come finals time, and he doesn't get the job done. So can't put my faith in someone that's never really performed in finals before. And then Hayden. We'd all love to see Hayden win. That would be fantastic, but I really think it's between the top three. They're currently top three at the moment. And the bottom three, they'll be fighting it out for the wooden spoon. I hope I'm not in that fight, but and then I think Sam will round out the top four with me and Davo sitting in those middling spots, hoping to upset someone's finest time with a bit of a freak win. So that's kind of my thoughts on the Gary Comyn Prize for Fantasy Excellence season. Now, to paint the picture, I'm sitting on my couch. I've just had a banana. I've got maths on in the background on mute, which is the way it should be. I've just come back from footy training, and it was a pretty good night, good numbers. And I've got to figure out a way to fill about another 5 to 6 minutes of this podcast, and I'm racking my mind, and I don't really know what I can do. So I thought maybe I could read everyone HelloFresh recipes. So that's what I'm going to do for the next 6 minutes. So you've reached this part in the podcast. Get ready for the next 6 minutes, me reading HelloFresh recipes. So, as I was saying before, I couldn't really figure out what to do to fill 5 to 6 minutes at a time. First idea was, why don't I read some HelloFresh recipes? But I decided that, you know what I should do? I should read out an excerpt from Gary Ablett's biography, which I have here in front of me. So I'm going to read you guys, for the last 5 minutes of the pod, an excerpt about the 2007 Grand Final. Things really clicked again come the first weekend of September, a Sunday qualifying final against North Melbourne producing a thumping 106-point win for us and direct entry into the preliminary final. In the week of, we watched with great interest as Collingwood, who'd swept aside Sydney in week one, travelled to Subiaco and stunned the reigning premier, third place West Coast. The Pies would be our preliminary final opponent. In an incredibly tight Friday night game, at the MCG in front of 98,000 people, we led by 5 points at halftime, three-quarter time, and full time to secure the club's first grand final berth in 12 years. It had been a stunning rise from an inauspicious start to the season. Our grand final opponent was Port Adelaide, the team that had inflicted our solitary loss in the second half of the season. The Power were coming into form at precisely the right time. Finishing second on the home and away season ladder, they had snuck past the Eagles in a tight first final before crushing North Melbourne by 93 points in their preliminary final. A display of strength that earned them the right to fight for a second AFL premiership 3 years on from their breakthrough flag. Their side would also feature several players with the grand final experience we lacked, and they were not to be taken lightly. The lead up to the grand final certainly introduced most of us to a range of new experiences. Among the players, only Cameron Mooney had previously played in a grand final, and he hadn't seen much game time in the North Melbourne's 1999 win, just his 11th senior game. We didn't know what to expect, as there were a lot of players who had never experienced on-field success at the club. Although we tried to focus on the task at hand, there was the grand final parade, then a couple of other commitments before the game day arrived. It was a bit surreal to be training in front of 10,000 people that week, but Mark Thompson's methods and previous experiences helped us enormously. From very early in our careers, we'd learned from him to treat every game the same. It was important for me to prepare identically to the other games, whether it was a semi-final or a grand final, big game or not. There were obviously certain commitments that we needed to fulfill, but outside of that, Bomber tried to make things as normal as possible. We trained back in Geelong, as usual. Team meetings all ran along the same lines as in the home and away season, and Bomber didn't build up the grand final too much. I can't speak highly enough of the way he helped us prepare for that game. Jimmy Bartel was one guy I'd played with since my TAC Cup days at the Geelong Falcons. We'd been drafted in the same year and shared so many experiences, and at the start of the 2007 grand final week, he won the Brownlow medal. Another potential distraction we'd soon have to put to one side. But to share that moment with Jimmy was something special. Only 5 years earlier, we'd arrived at the club together as teenagers with big dreams, and now we were close to fulfilling the biggest of them. Around the rest of the group that week, there were certainly some nerves, but we were quietly confident at the same time. We knew that we had a very strong list and we'd be playing very well as a team all year, so there was a lot of excitement going around into the game as well. Jimmy's Brownlow was not only was not the only potential distraction. The club made a big call and picked former captain Stephen King in the ruck at the expense of Mark Blake. I'm sure it wasn't a decision made lightly by selectors, but they banked on experience. Mark had played 22 games that year and come in leaps and bounds, but he'd only just turned 22, while Stephen would be playing his 193rd and final game at Geelong. He was someone who had played a lot more senior footy, and although injuries had restricted him to 5 games that year, the club was confident that Kingy could get through the game and use his no. I can only imagine how tough it was for Mark, but I think he handled it superbly. You could tell he was enormously disappointed, but he'd get another opportunity in the years to come. I'm typically a pretty relaxed person before a game, and I'd like to have a bit of fun during my preparations, but I think it's only human nature to experience some tension at times before you run out. A grand final is one of those times. Especially when we stood as a team in the tunnel beneath the MCG with our captain Tom Harley at the front, taking in the atmosphere of the occasion before we ran out onto the ground. Once you get into your warm-up routine, the nerves settle down. Then the first siren approaches and suddenly the atmosphere shifts again. It is only after the siren, once your instincts kick in and you're running around, that you become absorbed in the game. That was certainly the case on Grand Final Day. And thus ends the reading of the introduction to the 2007 Grand Final from Gary Ablett's biography. I wonder what will happen next.